Episode 181.
What I would advise people to do, business owners, is one, to get a security system, both in the office and also in the shop to watch it, and a recorder. And then I would also recommend that they check with their insurance agent and make sure that they're not only covered with their building, but also if the fire affected another business, are they covered?
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Hello, aftermarketers throughout North America and around the world. Carm Capriato here, and thank you for listening to Remarkable Results Radio. And welcome to episode 181 with Jerry Kubitsky from Summit Transmissions. This and all episodes is made possible through the sponsorship of Federal Mogul Motor Parts and Garage Gurus. For serious technical training and support, online, on site, and on demand, Garage Gurus is everything you need to know. Find out more at fmgarageguru.com. Hey, great news. I now have a smartphone app for your Apple or Android device. Yes, a smartphone app. Now, if you currently listen on iTunes, you're good, cool, no need to do anything. If you don't listen on iTunes, then you can go to the Apple App Store and search for Remarkable Results Radio. Just download the app, and you'll have all the episodes available on your smartphone to listen to anytime. Let's turn to social media. Hey, thanks to Steve Botherton, Jim Palmer, and Craig Tice for follows on Facebook, to Technician Academy for the Twitter follow, and to William Fernandez, Mike Feldman, Sam Pennington, and Rick Seralta for the LinkedIn connection. You can follow me on Facebook at Our Results Podcast, on Twitter at Our Results Biz, and LinkedIn. Look for Carm Capriato. Now meet Jerry Kubitsky from Summit Transmissions. Here's a 40-year industry entrepreneur that's had a few ups and downs in his career. He started in the parts business and various jobs and then was recruited to lead a transmission shop and then ultimately became the shop owner. His story, as I said, has a few twists to it, including the tenacity to climb out of a debt burden. One of the biggest challenges to date was a fire in August 2016. It started when the shop was closed, and it was recorded on his security camera that ultimately proved to the insurance company the origin of the fire. Jerry tells you the story and how one of his most recently implemented policies minimized damage to other customer cars that were parked in the shop. Other topics of interest to you in this interview are his wife Sandy works in the business, and she put her career as an artist on hold to work with Jerry. Jerry also talks about having a partner that he had to buy out, the challenges of a second location, his business mix that includes 40% of his business as general automotive repairs today, and the changing transmission business with builders retiring, and in many cases, instead of transmission repairs, they are putting in units. We get into training, his newly voted board seat with ASCCA out in California, and his work with the American Diabetes Association Bad Ride, and also many others. Now meet Jerry Kubitsky. I'd like you to meet a shop owner with a background in British auto parts, a dealership parts manager who worked in an exotic parts department, and who is now owner of Summit Transmissions in La Mesa, California. Ladies and gentlemen, meet Jerry Kubitsky.
Hello there. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm great, Jerry. Are you ready to share your remarkable results?
Absolutely.
I learned so much about you the other day when we had our pre-call. You have had such an interesting life and career, but I'm interested in this exotic car department thing. Excite me about that.
Well, I ended up, started working for Chief Auto Supply, and then I went to work for a British car dealer in West Covina, and we worked on, we had Jaguars and DeLoreans there. And by the way, DeLoreans are terrible handling cars. We had to put cement bags in it because at 55 miles an hour or 85 miles an hour, they would start to take off.
Yeah, they flew.
Think about Back to the Future of when they go into the time. Yeah. It's 85 miles an hour.
Oh, that's right. Oh,
yeah.
The unwritten rule of the DeLorean. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So they were terrible cars, but they looked nice. Then I moved to San Diego and I got a job at a place called British Motorsport. And I was parts manager there, and we worked on Jaguars, DeLorean, or not DeLoreans, MGs, Aston Martins, Rolls-Royce, Bentley. In fact, I had to lock up at 120 miles an hour Aston Martin DB5 with a manual transmission, right-hand drive on the freeway one time, or twice in one day.
Twice in one day?
Yeah, it had a brake light that came on at 100 miles an hour, and I was test driving.
Well, so was that fun or scary?
It was interesting. I had good driving skill, but it was interesting driving a right-hand drive car, locking it up at 120 miles an hour to avoid other cars, and downshifting with your left hand rather than your right hand.
Wow. Oh, God, yes. The opposite side, huh?
Yeah, you have to think very quickly.
Boy, I bet you do. Now, at that moment in your life, did you ever think you were going to be a business owner?
No. No, I figured I'd be in parts departments and that. I did a good job, and I love British cars. I've restored three MGBs, an Austin Healey 3000, TR3, and I just loved cars all my life.
You know, I want to say before we go on any further, I met you at Nace Cars, am I right?
Correct.
That was great. It was great to meet you with a bunch of my alumni. And when I met you, I knew we had to have you on the air. Now,
thank you.
You have really an interesting story that you had a major fire in your business. And I want to get to that because I think there's a great story of how you overcame that. So there was a point in time you ended up going to work for Summit Transmissions, the place you own now.
Correct.
Take us to that story.
Okay. Basically, I was at a seminar, and the guy who owned Summit Transmissions, he was an absentee owner, was complaining about management problems. I said, could I help you? And he said, no. And then it came up again, and I asked him, look, I have management experience. I'd be glad to help you. And he said, no. And then the next thing I know, he gives me a phone call that he wants me to come to work for him. And I said, no. And then he said, name your price, name what you want to do. I need you here. You're the person I want. And so I ended up leaving the British Motorsport and coming to work at Summit Transmissions. And I worked here for about 10 years, but he was difficult to get along with sometimes. He was very demanding, very smart, though, extremely smart. But
Jerry, what did he see in you that he wanted to engage with you? What was your quality, your strength?
Probably tenacity, wanting to help, wanting to serve, wanting to solve problems. Those are some of the qualities I have. Is I love getting things done. That was what my reputation was at Chief Auto Supply. I was there 2 weeks and became assistant manager. And then the third week, they gave me my own store. So
wow,
I like tackling problems and getting things taken care of.
So you're at the Summit for 10 years and you say, hey, listen, I've had enough of this.
Right. So I started an auto detailing place and I gave notice and he says, well, if you're going to quit, then you're the business right now. So I'll sell the business. And I said, well, if you're going to sell the business, I'm going to buy the business. So I went with the person who was a builder. His name was Chris Carson. And we bought the business together and started taking, I did the management of the business and he did the building for quite some time.
Okay, so he was a transmission builder.
Right, correct.
And did you guys both have enough money to get into this thing?
We were scrimping.
All right.
You know, it was like
you're hesitating enough and I know exactly what you mean and where you're going. Now, was it a tough deal to get? Was he a tough negotiator, the owner?
No, actually, he was absolutely fine because he wanted to move into computers. And so he was absolutely thrilled to death to sell it to his employees, which I think any owner feels that way. Is if they could pass it on to their employees, I think that's a great feeling.
How long ago?
That was in 1992, March of 92, that we did that. And after about 4 or 5 years, he was unable to, my partner was unable to work on the transmissions anymore because of the solvent and it just irritated his hand. So we had to hire a builder and he was able to do some things, but not really enough. And so the company started going into debt because we had too much payroll.
Yeah,
too much. But there was nothing we could do.
Yeah, too much stress on the business.
Yeah, so in 2007, I basically went to him. I said, look, we're in debt. We're not moving forward. They're going to sell the property. We got to get out of here. You either buy me out, I buy you out, or we close. One of the, you know, that's the choices.
Were you the kind of person who carried that debt heavy on your heart?
Yes, very much so. And I just, part of the problem was, and some partnerships are really good, but one of the things that was a problem with the partnership is making decisions. When you have two people that are trying to make a decision and they can't make it right away because of different personalities, that really slows things down. The problem is I'm the type of person that I go 1, 2, 3, here's the decision. He was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, all the way through 10. And if you interrupted him at 7, he'd have to go back to 1 again. So it made it hard to move on stuff. And so we were very stagnant. So that was one of the other reasons I wanted to close the business.
So it obviously wasn't a partnership made in heaven, and that's a shame because they all don't necessarily work right. Yet, you know, did you know day one when you knew you had to hire a builder that there were going to be problems down the road?
I think builder or business people are optimistic, and they're willing to overcome just about anything. And it really takes a sledgehammer over the head for them to say, well, this is not going to work. I at least that's my personality, is I'm really stubborn, and we're still good friends. So it's not a matter of getting mad at each other as much as I didn't see it working anymore.
That's great that you're still friends. I'm talking with Mike Zralik, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. So you have this van, and it's the Guru on the Go van, and it's all nicely decked out, and you drop by for lunches and learns. How do shops get a chance to get that van to come to their place?
Well, they can, of course, call into our Guru hotline and request it. They can talk to their parts distributor, you know, and through that channel, we can go out and do some training, or even with us out in the field. You know, if they see us, we do various warehouse distributor type shows, many different events. We're out there everywhere. Just come by and ask, and we'll be more than happy to come by.
Hey, Mike, if I said you were a champion for Federal Mogul Motor Parts, would I be right?
You betcha.
So give me an example.
I live, eat, breathe Federal Mogul on a daily basis. You know, growing up, I being in the racing industry, I knew a lot about Moog. I loved Moog. Felpro, same thing. To go out and be able to talk about a company this big, this strong, it makes me happy every single day. I'm so excited to do it on a day in and day out basis.
What are technicians saying after you're done with your presentation?
When can you come back? They want more day in and day out.
They want more, and you have more to give. You've got so many key product lines in the industry.
Oh, we have a ton of product lines and a ton of training that's available, you know, with those product lines and on a technical side too.
How dazzled are the techs to see that compression-loaded ball joint with the pre-installed integral dust boot?
They come unglued. They are so excited about that because less frustrations. You know, they've been dealing with issues in the field of damaging that boot during installation, and it makes it so much easier to put in. And it's a beautiful piece.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the Gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com.
Now, did you ever get up to two places?
Yes. We had at that same time that I ended up buying him out, we had the place in El Cajon, which was doing quite well. It was a smaller place, about 2,500 square feet with about 5 bays, and it was a well-established place. And because I knew we had to move, I bought a place in La Mesa, which was a larger place, about 5,000 square feet. And I started running over here, and that's the same time I hired my wife. Now, I have to say about my wife, she learned how to type on her own. She's an artist. She's a wonderful artist. Had no business sense whatsoever, and she, bless her soul, she learned typing. She learned bookkeeping. She learned everything she needed. She was going back and forth between both stores, doing everything she could to run it, you know, to help me run it. So I couldn't have done it without her.
That's a great story. How many wives come to the aid of their husbands in time of need and to help? Now, is she still working for you?
Yeah. Yeah. We work together every single day.
What about her art? Did she put it on the back burner?
She's basically put her art to the side. We were on the show circuit for 14 years, and she was a renowned artist, but wildlife art just didn't sell well enough, and it wasn't enough to make money. And she's not a salesperson. She's an artist. Different mindset.
Sure.
So in order for sales to be done, I had to be there. And there was just so much time. So we made the decision. We said, you know what? We can do better with this business than we can with your art business. Let's put it to the side. And she's done some artwork, and we have art in our shop. We're probably the only auto parts store or automotive repair shop with an art gallery in it.
Well, no, that's not true.
Oh, okay.
That is absolutely not true. You have to go out and listen to Bogey Latiner's episode.
Okay.
And Bogey has an art gallery, and she has she recycles the art every so many months and then invites people to come back in and see the art. So
okay.
Listen to Bogey Latiner's episode. And
I will do that.
You'll realize, and your wife should listen to it, because female shop owner, and she does those very different things. Now, thought that I had in the back of my mind about you and your wife, retirement almost sounds exciting.
No.
Oh, because you get back to doing your art thing.
I jokingly say to her that I'm trying to see if I can fire her. And she knows it's a joke. I would love for her to get back into the art business. I would love for her to do art. It's her passion, and she's just brilliant at it. But there's just no way that she can leave here right now, because she just helps me too much. But I'm looking for a replacement. That's my goal, is to find a replacement for her that she can be at home and do artwork and do art shows and enjoy that part of it, because she's so artistic.
What a great partner. Now, you are down to one shop, am I right?
That's correct. The person that I hired at the other place really didn't put the passion into it to sell. And so my accountant said, look, you're bleeding really badly. You need to close one of the places. So that's what we did, and moved all the equipment over here. And that was a great move. I like La Mesa a lot.
So you had a chance to get back into debt, but you chose not to.
No, we ended up getting into more debt, because I ended up buying a shop that was going under. So I had the one shop, and I had to have equipment for both of the shops. So we were very heavily into debt, but I just felt I could make it.
What a story. Now, are you out of debt now?
We're not quite out of debt, but we're really close.
Okay, that's great.
We've done every extra penny that we have went towards bills and that, to get that debt down.
Now I see why Mama has to stay.
Yeah, she works for free. No, just kidding.
I get it. I understand. I mean, there's a lot of sacrifice that happens within families to do the right thing.
Yeah. The main thing that we're blessed with is Sandy and I get along really, really well. We don't fight. We talk about things. We're a great partnership, and it worked the opposite way. When she was in the art business, she was my boss.
Everybody tells the story, I could never work with my wife. I could never work with my spouse. And there was a period of time that I worked with mine. And we got along spectacularly. 40 years of marriage now. Interesting. And she works with me a little degree on the podcast and helping doing some editing and stuff. But what is your magic formula? Why do you think it works for you?
What I will tell you is One is our personalities. We're, in a sense, opposite. I'm out there. I'm, you know, very much at home with speaking to people and speaking to strangers. She's very shy, but she's come a long way. You know, she greets the customers and she's fine. Part of it is our belief system, our faith. Every day, every morning we pray, we read together, and we have a lot of faith, and we know that there's a higher power than us that owns this place. And that's what's sustaining us, is our faith, especially with what's just happened this year with the fire.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. Obviously, it's great to have the family support. By the way, as you were talking to me about your wife, you're describing me and Ann, unbelievably. Yeah, the exact personalities. And what worked for us, Jerry, and probably for you too, is we each knew our roles. And uh-huh. And she knew what she had to do, and I knew what I had to do. And we also laughed a lot, and we continue to be best friends. So does that ring a bell for you?
Well, I'm going to say something that you're going to be very shocked at. Before I met my wife, I made a full description on paper of exactly the woman that I wanted. Exactly. I mean, everything. Personality, everything about her. And then I also made a paper what kind of person I had to be to be with that person.
Great.
And it was very easy to find Sandy, and I knew exactly what I wanted. And I think I asked her to marry me within 3 weeks. Of course, she turned me down numerous times, but
we have a very similar and interesting story, but that's safe for maybe, who knows, maybe I should do a podcast on my background someday, because my fans want to know. I don't know that. Well, great story. Now, so we really need to talk about the fire, because I think there's a lot that our listener can learn from, you know, the challenge that you had to overcome it.
Yeah, it was August 17th. I had just finished a meeting over at Cuyamaca College, and I came home, and the phone call that I got was from one of my employees that said, you need to get over here very quickly. The place is on fire, and the fire engines are here, and, you know, car caught on fire inside. So I just turned to Sandy and said, let's get dressed and go over there. And we were very calm about it. You know, we just, our faith. And we came over here, and of course, fire engines were all over the place. And I looked, and all of our doors, besides for one, were cut because the fire department had to break in our front door with a great big saw. They busted out the windows. There was water all over the place. All the electricity was off, and all of our doors were cut. And this was, you know, we got here about 10 o'clock. It took us about 20 minutes to get here. So we just basically assessed the damages in that, and I called a company up that I've done work with before. You know, we were using flashlights and our cell phones and everything, and got them over here to put wood on the door, so at least that we had some security on that, and then fix the front door. So that got done. We got out of here about 2:30 in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, and then got back here at about 7 in the morning to open back up and really assess the damage in daylight. And it was terrible. What happened was, there was a vehicle that we took in. It had a breath analyzer in it, and we didn't do anything except the basic check on it. So we hadn't worked on it or anything. And apparently that caught on fire. Now, one thing I'll let you know that I think is very important is I had video cameras. I just recently put in a surveillance system. And it wasn't to keep an eye on the employees, but just so I could watch the shop and watch what was going on and, you know, and kind of know what's going on. Well, that recorded the fire at 8:30 at night. And that was a tremendous help with the insurance company, because they could see we weren't here. Nobody caused it. Nobody was at fault.
So you could actually see that it was that vehicle that caught on fire.
Yes.
But you didn't know that it was the breathalyzer device as the cause until what? How much later?
We didn't know about it until they did an investigation, full investigation.
Got it.
And they determined that whoever put the breath analyzer in ran the wires against metal and it basically took off the rubber. In other words, it rubbed the insulation, and it caused a dead short into the battery, which caused the battery to overheat and then catch on fire, and then everything went from there.
Well, that sure made it easy to figure out where the problem was. So what a smart investment.
It helped tremendously, but the damage that was done, we have tall ceilings, which is good. One of the things I'll say, interrupt for a second by saying one of the policies that we had just put in place was that all cars inside the shop that are locked up, the windows are rolled up, and the keys are either put in the door or put on top of the car or on the seat. In other words, no ignition keys are left in the car. And the reason that becomes important is because that helped control the fire. So it helped control the fire so that the smoke was there, but it didn't spread as much because you have rubber burning, you have upholstery burning, wiring burning, fuel burning, all that stuff. So it contained it in the Honda. And then also, because all the other cars were locked up the same way, there was less damage to some of the cars because they didn't get all the smoke in.
So it was the smoke inhalation on the interior.
Yeah, there was a Volvo that had a sunroof open, and unfortunately we had a 57 Chevy Nomad that was up on the lift. It was quite a distance away, and somebody left the window down on that, so that did get some smoke damage to the stainless steel. But other than that, the damage was minimum. A lot of the cars just needed to be ran through the car wash or detailed, and they were fine.
Okay, I understand the windows up, but why the keys on the seat?
Because that way there's no chance of somebody leaving the ignition on and causing a problem.
I got it.
In other words, when the investigators came by, they could see the key on the center console. They knew that our guys were not at fault, that they didn't leave the ignition on and caused a problem.
Ignition not on, car not running. And what if someone broke in, though, instead of trying to hunt for the keys somewhere, man, they just, open the car door in there. And they drive out through your garage door, I guess.
Well, that's true, but we have alarm systems and everything else. Yeah. So if they're going to do that, I think other stuff.
Yeah, somebody's going to be on their way by the time that happens. You're right.
Yeah.
Okay, so recovery. Was the business down? Did you have recovery insurance? Help me with post-fire.
We did have insurance. We had insurance that covered our property and what we have done to the building, like the painting was done and our equipment, our lifts, four of our lifts were damaged. The cars that were in there were covered. There was a loss of income damage or insurance. But what wasn't covered was the building itself and also the doors and the windows. And so that became a sticky point because there was a possibility that that was not going to be covered, and that would have put us in debt immediately of about $50,000.
And
the cleanup alone was $27,000.
But that would be a landlord issue, right?
Well, at that point in time, it looked like the landlord was saying, no, we're not at fault. We're not covering it.
Hmm.
Because of the investigation, because of the camera and everything else, they finally said, you know what, we have somebody that we can go after. So they went ahead and paid for the rest of the stuff.
I see. Do you know if they ever recovered?
That'll probably be a long term down the road.
Got it.
But what I would advise people to do, business owners, is one, to get a security system, both in the office and also in the shop to watch it, and a recorder. And then I would also recommend that they check with their insurance agent and make sure that they're not only covered with their building, but also if the fire affected another business, are they covered? That's something people don't think about.
How long were you out of business?
We were out of business really for a complete month without being able to do anything except do repairs and that. And then probably another month and a half that we were closed on Saturdays and kind of piecemealing stuff, putting things back together and getting stuff done. In fact, the fire was in August, and just this month we had the windows put in. Last month we had the doors put in, and the lifts were put in November, just before Thanksgiving. So we were down one lift, and there was a couple of lifts that were on the shaky side. So we weren't fully recovered until really this month.
Getting back to that security system, did you have it professionally installed, or did you go out and buy one of these off-the-shelf camera systems?
I bought off-the-shelf camera system, and I installed it myself. It's basically wiring and that, and it's not that hard to do.
And it's not a lot of money today. Is it, what, $500-$600?
I just bought a system. I use Revo, and I was very pleased with their system because they have good support. And it was around $600 or $700 with eight cameras.
It's amazing. I see them all over.
Yeah, 1 terabyte hard drive on it.
Well, good for you. Great advice. Thank you very much. Now, is business back to the level that it was before the fire?
Not yet. We're down this year, but I think a lot of businesses are down this year. We're still on the downside, but we've made it through the year.
You know, there's some other really exciting things going on in your world, and that is you were very, very involved with the associations, and I think you took some time off, but now you're back in with a vengeance. Tell me about it.
Well, at about 4 or 5 years ago, at that time, I was chairman for American Diabetes Association Rips Bad Ride, because I was into motorcycling, and I became chairman for San Diego. I also was on the board of directors for the state for ASCCA, and I was chapter president, and then running this business, and I was also PR committee chair.
Now, wait a minute. You were the chapter president of Chapter 24.
Yeah, Chapter 24, I mean, which is one of the larger chapters of ASCCA.
That's the big one. I love ASCCA. They're great. They're great people. Okay.
They are. So I had all that stuff going on, and I was just spread too thin, and I saw my business was not – I couldn't pay enough attention to the business. So I left everything. I said, I'm sorry. I got to pay attention to the business, because if there's no business, I can't do anything. And so I took time off, and now I feel that I've been in good shape. So I've gone back, and I've been elected to the board of directors for next year. And I'm also taking over back over PR committee, which is a public relations committee. But the main thing that I'm concerned about and want to do really well is the membership committee.
Got it.
It's such a great organization, and yet there's not enough people in it, and it serves everybody so well. I mean, I'm just amazed that more people are not involved in it.
This is true everywhere, both national, state level, about membership. And I happen to be on the board of an association. I remember talking to Dennis Montalbano, your outgoing president.
Yes.
And Dennis, you know, took road trips to and he realized how many service centers, shop owners, potential members of ASCCA versus how many members you have. And it's upside down. So what do you have to do to convince someone to come out to join an organization like yours?
That's a $1 million question there.
Well, the reason that I asked it is because you just said you want to work on membership. And I figured you worked on your 30-second elevator speech.
It's an organization that there's really no reason not to be a member. By the time you get done with the discounts that you get, like give you an example is our credit card processing. They pay for the state membership if you process your credit card through them. The being able to call another shop and ask for help.
Sure.
Being able to have every month a meeting with somebody that knows more than you do, advertising, laws, whatever. Being able to call a lawyer and have a half hour worth of time with a lawyer so you don't make a stupid mistake.
Priceless.
All that stuff. And it's kind of like, You can't convince somebody of that. I ran through the same thing with the American Diabetes Association. The reason I got in with motorcycles is I ride. Okay. The biggest part with motorcyclists is most of them are subject to diabetes because they eat a lot, they drink a lot, and they don't get a whole lot of exercise. Yet trying to get them to be part of the American Diabetes Association and learn about diabetes, it's difficult.
Okay, so you're hanging out with an individual who really you believe in your heart should join ASCCA. And you give the pitch, which is one of these no-brainer pitches for all the reasons and all the values. Is there a moment in time down here, 4, 5, 6 years down the road, that there's going to be a separation of the men and the boys in the industry because there's so many things going on?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I think people get into a routine and they just stay with that and they're comfortable with that. And they don't look beyond it. And you see that with mechanics. When we go, we do classes almost every 2 months through CarNet. Okay. And I drag my guys there. I'm going to tell you something. I'm not a mechanic. I'm not a technician. I've worked on cars all my life, but I'm not a technician the way these guys are. Mm-hmm. I go to every one of those seminars so that they go, so that they know that I'm there.
Yeah.
It's frustrating because they have to have that knowledge to work on cars. And what you're saying is separating the men from the boys. Yes, there's going to be a lot of automotive shops that they're not going to be around anymore because they're not doing what it takes to educate themselves and be better. A lot of transmission shops have gone to General Automotive, okay, and have gone to putting units in. The reason being is that a lot of the builders stop learning. And so there's not good people out there. And the shops have been, you know, they've changed and become parts replacers a lot of the time. And I think that's what's going to be is a lot of shops are not going to be able to repair cars anymore as much as just replace parts.
So you're just
very much like,
so you're putting in units more than you're actually have a skilled tech who knows how to tear something down and put it back together.
I do have one, but he's limited on what he can do. But basically, yeah, I put units in. The industry has changed.
How much of your business is automotive?
Well, it's 100% automotive, but you mean as far as transmission goes?
Yeah.
I would say now it's probably 60% transmissions and the rest is automotive.
Okay. And years ago, say 5 years ago, was it 80-20?
90%.
Okay. All right. So you're adopting, you're changing because it's the kind of work you must do, or it's because of the changing technology and transmissions?
Both. Parts are not available on transmissions, and it just makes more sense for me to buy a unit that's fully guaranteed, and that if something goes wrong, I get paid labor for it, rather than me taking the loss on it and paying my builder two or three times to fix something, you know, or he can't get parts, or he's delayed, or the car's out for a week. So it just makes more sense to buy units now.
Do many automotive shops, traditional, do a lot of transmission work?
I think more and more are putting units in. The problem with that is a lot of them don't have the knowledge to really diagnose what is wrong.
Got
and
it.
So I think a lot of transmissions are being sold that don't need to be sold.
So is that like an A-tech that knows how to diagnose a transmission?
No. Even the best technicians, a lot of them don't know transmissions.
Okay, but in your world...
I'm sorry, the best technician... Yeah, real quick example, Volkswagen Rabbits and Jettas.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I've done... 17 of them have come in the last year and a half with transmission problems where they won't shift, they slip, they do all sorts of things. I have not replaced one transmission yet. I've replaced valve bodies.
Got
and it's
it.
Worked every single time.
But let me go back to my analogy on the A-tech. Yeah. You know, in the automotive side, the A-tech, all the diagnostic equipment, he's a diagnostician, if you will. Do you have an individual like that on your staff that is the brainiac of transmissions?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. George.
George. Okay. And George is basically what? He could take it for a ride and he knows exactly what's wrong with it?
He knows a lot, but he knows what to check out. One of the things I've taught my guys is don't make assumptions. Check things out, because you can make assumptions and then be wrong on it. So we do a very thorough check on each car that comes in. We scan it for codes. We test drive it. Sometimes George will test drive a vehicle and he says, hey, I'm not sure about this. Jerry, test drive it, because I have a lot of experience with the test drive. So we do a lot to double check things.
Great, great business banter, Jerry. Thank you. What's the best advice you've ever been given?
Been given a lot of advice. I'm going to say it instead of advice, say it this way, that with customers, they have to trust you. You have to earn that trust. Now, you can have a one-time customer that comes in, and yeah, you can sell them a whole bunch of stuff, but you have to earn that trust. So one of the philosophies that we have here is to take care of our customers, we serve our customers. And we do our very best to help them out. Yeah, every car that comes in probably has a full list of stuff that's wrong. From one standpoint, you go to all the seminars and it's like, sell them everything. You know, they have problems with it. But my feeling is that, yeah, you can tell them about everything, but you need to sit down with them and say, okay, these are the priorities. This is what you need right now. This is what you can have done later. What's your pocketbook? What can we get done now? And you need to be on their side, not just selling them everything. And I think that's worked very well. We've been in business for 34 years now. I've been here for 31 years. We have probably about 300 to 400 five-star reviews. We have an excellent reputation, and it's because of how we treat our customers.
You sound like a person with a servant's heart.
I am. I think that's a proper way of being.
Good for you. Now, you just said you've been around there 31 years. When you look down the road, 10, where do you see yourself?
What I would like to do is eventually get to the point where this place is doing very well, to bring somebody else in that I can possibly sell them the business. I would love to have somebody with the same heart that I have and the same moral compass. You know, it's not about just selling the business. It's about passing on my customers and my business to somebody that cares. And then from there, I would love to travel. I love traveling with my wife. I'd love to go to Europe. I have a friend in New Zealand. I would love to do hiking there and travel. I would love her to be able to do art shows and for me to be with her doing art shows. And I look at possibly doing some teaching later on.
Ah, interesting. You enjoy teaching what, entrepreneurialism, business?
I would probably teach being service manager.
Okay.
Or service advisor and how to take care of customers. I was teaching a class, a Bible study class on business. And I did that for about a year and a half. And I loved it. I enjoyed it tremendously.
Yeah, great. It's just great to hear that you've got some things after Summit someday. So looking back, Jerry, what are you the most proud of?
Proud of my wife, that's for sure. I'm proud of the reputation that Summit has had, and I've also am very proud that because of our faith that we've weathered some really bad storms and that we're looking forward to the future, and that I may get down for a little bit sometimes, but I'm always back up. I'm always an optimist that I know things will be better, and I always look at solving problems.
Good. I really enjoyed this. This was a great banter, and you've had your share of challenges you've overcome. Well, Jerry Kubitsky from Summit Transmissions, thanks for sharing your wisdom, your great and remarkable results. Now, any final words of wisdom for us?
Believe in somebody or something bigger than yourself. That's carried us through. And be a servant to your wife or your spouse. Take care of them. And just treasure people. Absolutely treasure them. The money is not important. Material stuff is not important. but friendships and your relationships are the most important things in life. And that's, I have friends from high, I have a friend from kindergarten. We're still friends. I have friends from high school. I treasure friendships like they're just so special to me.
Wonderful. Hey, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the interview.
Hey, Aftermarketers, thanks for joining in. There were some very interesting takeaways and learning moments in the case of the fire that Jerry had. For an in-depth episode experience, don't miss the show notes for this episode with Jerry Kubitsky. Find them exclusively on the show's episodes page at remarkableresults.biz/E181. Any questions or comments, email me at carm@remarkableresults.biz. Love to hear from you. Or head over to the contact page on the website. You are an important reason I bring you these interviews, so you can profit from the answers found in each episode. Your help is also needed to share the wisdom and grow this very important industry resource. And I'm grateful and thankful for your support. Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from another inspiring aftermarket professional. Until next time.